will be projected in the Adobe Connect room.
Audio. This is a live audio recording for Centralized Zone Data Access Program live demo from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in room 1B.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Centralized Zone Data Access Program demo session. My name is Wendy Proffitt. I'm an ICANN staff in the Registry Services Department, and I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves. Go ahead, Francisco.
Hello, this is Francisco, GTD Registry Technical Liaison on ICANN.
Krista Papik, GTLD, Registry Services Director.
Okay, great. While we work on our technical issues, the purpose of this session is to do a live demonstration of the new Centralized Zone Data Access Program. This is the culmination of the work of the Zone File Access Advisory Group that did most of their work between 2009 and 2010. I wanted to show you a list of all of their names, but we're getting there. So this was a community request from the people who access zone data, and they wanted to play something that would scale with the expansion in the domain name space with all the new GTLDs. Currently, in order to access zone data, you have to contract individually with each registry, and that becomes increasingly difficult when there's 1,400. So the idea was that, okay, I'm sorry, I'm going to try to pull up the presentation and then I'll continue talking. Hold a second. There we go. Okay. A little slow on the uptake, but I think we're getting there. So I did the introductions. We're going to do a little bit more on the background, and this is the Centralized Zone Data Access Program. These are the members of the community that spent such a great deal of time designing the the model of the program, and they are representing current registries, new prospective registries with new GTLD applicants, security experts, and zone data consumers themselves. So yes, they designed the model and the requirements on which this system was built. Zone data consumers consist of internet scholars and researchers, intellectual property experts, security experts, and law enforcement. So like I said, those were all people that were in the advisory group. And they were tasked with setting forth a new model for zone access to scale, I think I already said this, that would include a standard delivery of the data across the TLDs and also simplify the contracting process. So it's something that will help the registries as well as the zone data consumers and the whole process. Instead of contracts, we'll do a click-through terms and conditions. It's really hard for me to see this. This is basically the timeline. The original zone file access briefing paper was written in November of 2009, and by December they had established the community volunteers. In February, they put forth the concept paper and the cost model, and then they did a workshop in Nairobi, and that was followed by a public comment period. Thank you. After the public comment period closed, they wrote a strategy proposal, and it kind of sat on the back burner, and you know, as the new GTLD program was developing, and you know, a lot of other priorities came along. So we've just picked it back up this year, and we began production in March. And today is the launch and the beta version. So there's still a lot of work to be done, and we'd like to hear from you if there's anything, you know, as I go through it. And you're welcome to log in yourself. It could be found at czdap.icann.org. I encourage you to get in there and create an account and, you know, click through. Right now we only have actually one registry, but Dot Museum was kind enough to let us use their zone data for the purpose of this testing, so that's what you'll see when I go through the demo in just a moment. And then hopefully after we hear from you in August, we'll have a advanced functionality and a full launch, and we'll continue to work on it as we go and as we add new registries to it. But without further ado, oh no, I want to speak to one more slide. This is kind of a clunky slide, but it sort of explains that it starts with a data consumer requesting the zone data inside the system, and then the registry operator receives the request and then logs into the system to approve or deny the request, and depending on the registry, they'll either provide an FTP URL with login and password credentials, or just approve or deny the request, and then the data consumer can then go in and fetch the data themselves inside the system and download. And that the difference between those two are some of the registries want to have control over their data, and they don't, and they want to the consumer to come and access their server and do the transfer that way. But some of the other registries, it's a service that we're going to provide to do the transfer for them, and we'll format the data, and the end user can just come in and get the data straight through the system for those registries who choose to opt, you know, for that method. Okay, so let me see if I can go live. Who can help me get to the to Chrome? No, I need Chrome.
Yeah, leave the prop.
Okay, so I'm just going to sort of log in first as an end user, and just a little text on the front. Not every registry, current registry, is obligated to use this, so I do encourage anyone, if they're here from one of the current registries, to consider it, because the more TLDs that are in here, the more, you know, helpful the whole program will be, but it is a requirement for all the new GTLDs to use this system going forward. So once you log in, this is the dashboard, and you can see you have a choice of pending, approved, denied, revoked, or expired requests. The minimum is 90 days, which is consistent with the current zone file agreements of the current registries, and then you will create a new request. And this next part is generating a security key. We had our security team come in and look at the system and make recommendations. So this is something that we're following based on the recommendations of our ICANN security note. Makes you go through a couple of hoops, but it's actually quite simple. And if you have any trouble with it, there's a very good help section it's smart enough to know which browser you're using in, and it will give you instructions on how to do this portion. But just download the key, and once it's downloaded, request access. And then what you see is a list on the left of all of the available TLDs. Oops. And you can choose all, or you can just choose one or, you know, two, whatever you're interested in. And once, you know, you get 1,400 in here, you can actually filter them. So as you start typing, it shows you what's there. And then you have to provide a reason for your access. So this is a message that the registries will see. They will also see, when you create an account, there's a form that asks you for everything from your name and organization to address and why you want the zone data. It all will show to the registry operator who is receiving the request, including an automatically generated IP address. So you don't have to, as the end user, tell them what your IP address is, but the registry operator will see where the request is coming from. And then these are the terms and conditions. These are just for the sake of the beta testing. But it's important to note that you're agreeing as the end user to, you're going into an agreement with the registry. ICANN is not party to this agreement. This is directly between the end user and the registry. And once you agree, request the zone files. And it says your little message, your request has been received. So now, when you go to your dashboard, you've got a list of pending. You can, you know, I don't have any that are approved because I've made myself a new user, but if you've gotten any that are expired, it'll all show here, and this is the pending one. So now I'm going to log out and log back in as a registry operator. And then this is the dashboard for the registry operator. They can see all of the requests. They can click on View Full Request and see all the information that the end user put in, who the user is, which terms and conditions apply. It's possible to update the terms and conditions, and there's a timestamp. So if you've gotten access to a previous terms and condition for one TLD and then they change, you'll be able to see which version you're obligated to under the terms that you chose when you agreed, if that makes sense. So, and then there's a history. You'll see that change as I accept so the registry operator then can either approve or deny, and don't have to put anything more than that. But if there's a reason why the registry operator would deny the request, they don't believe that the person is who they are, they didn't put enough information in the contact field, or they didn't like what the reason was, they can say, this is denied and here's why. I'm going to approve this one so we can see what happens. It's then approved, and then I'll log out and log back in. A message via email will be sent to the end user when the registry responds. Let's see here. Back as user. And now you see that it's approved. So I'll click on Museum. And then this is a TLD that opted for the direct download to the system rather than the FTP access. So I'll download. And I think there it is. And there's your sound file. So The current format that is required for the delivery of the data is not the same as the RFC, I think 1034, 1035. This is a subset of those original requirements, and this was determined by the working group, and I think Francisco could probably speak more to that, so I'm going to... It's not showing in the Adobe room.
You didn't share that part.
Okay, I'm sorry I didn't share that part in the Adobe. Okay, how do I do that?
Where did you save it?
It's in the downloads. That one. Does that show? Okay, so there's the zone data for .museum. And that is essentially the program. So I think we're probably in good time. Does anyone have any questions?
Hey, sorry, Mike. Can you go to the microphone, please? Thank you.
So on the login screen, there was a tick box, approve and pending.
Mm-hmm.
So the pending, I would assume that would be new GTLDs are supposed to go into the root. So when would a TLD show as pending? At signing of contract, passing technical evaluation, or IANA delegation, or has not yet been determined?
The pending was just the request, so the TLD won't show up in the system at all until they're fully, when the new registry comes on board, they have to designate a contact person for the CZDAP system, and as soon as they go through the onboarding process, we'll then add them to, an ICANN administrator will add them to the system with that contact person as designated as a registry operator.
Okay, so then I guess, so thank you for answering that question. Let me rephrase the question again. When will new GTLD registries be required to start providing their zone file? When will that trigger? When will they show up at signing, technical delegation, IANA?
I'm going to let Francisco answer that one. Thank you.
So that question came up yesterday when talking with one of the four registries that sign a contract. It's an interesting question because, as far as I can tell, I'm not a lawyer. Once they sign a contract, they are required to do this. However, they have not been delegated. So there is a conversation that has to be that has to happen to define when this will be triggered.
So I appreciate that chicken and egg scenario. I mean, if you look at it historically, having done this since 2002, when a TLD it goes to IANA and they approve it and VeriSign enters in the root, usually there's one or two. So these registries know those one or two names that they're going to put so that they could link it to a press release. So I don't know if that helps. Follow-up question. You were talking about how the ability for the end user to agree to the contractual terms and how registries may change those terms. I guess my question is, what is sort of the sequence? Okay.
Let me just interrupt. The registries don't... The terms and conditions are standardized as well, so the registries wouldn't necessarily change the terms. So that's... I'm going to publish the terms and conditions coming up shortly once they're finalized, and then that will be something else that the community can comment on. We'd like to, you know, get something that can be standardized across the board. There is the ability in the system to have various, you know, more than one version, but, you know, the idea is that this is standard, and it applies to all TLDs.
Acknowledging, yes, but even standard contracts, i.e. the standard registry contract, has changed several times.
True.
2000. So things change. And I guess my question from a sort of a contractual standpoint would be, if there is a contractual change, what mechanisms will be in place to notify the end users? Because if they're building systems that are downloading data, and a lot of that's meant to be automated, I'm just asking about the consequences. If there is a change and somehow the consequence of not acknowledging it within a set time frame will result in denial of data.
I think I understand your question. To the terms and conditions, probably I was hoping that one of my legal team would be here to help me out with those questions.
Amy left you hanging there.
But as far as the various... Did you want to say something, Krista?
Hi, Mike. It's Krista.
I know you.
So you're asking, we have standard terms and conditions. click through, get that. 6 years from now, we change those terms and conditions. How do we let the end user know that? Is that the question?
It's that, as well as I think one of the things, even like the brand registry groups are discussing this, perhaps different exemptions, and you look at like reserve name lists. I think there's just a lot of potential things, because obviously a reserve name is not going to appear in the zone file. And I'm put it this way, I'll send this, I'll make it real easy. I'll send it to Amy.
Yes, and you can also, if you would, send it to czdap@icann.org. That's mm-hmm. the email for all the feedback to be sent, and that will go to a number of ICANN staff, and that and you know, copy Amy on it. I don't know if Amy's in there, but I think someone on our legal team might be, but that would help, and then we can have one place for all of the feedback. We're not actually putting it out for public comment, but you can send as much as you want to that email address, and we'll compile all of the questions there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have a lot of questions in the queue. If there's nobody else that has any in the room. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Rod Rasmussen here. I was actually co-chair of that working group, so I'm very happy to see actual something that's been produced from it. That's very gratifying to the group, so thank you very much on pursuing this. Just a question that comes to mind, looking at the way this is right now, and hopefully this is factored in, is that most of the people who are doing zone file access are doing it on an automated basis, right? So I wouldn't want to have to manually log into the system and pull down the file each time. I also would want to specify a specific or range of IP addresses that I would be pulling the file from. I didn't see that in the demo, but I'm assuming, hopefully, that is part of the system going forward, and that would be taken care of. So that was kind of just a technical.
Thank you for your comment, Rod. I know that there was some advanced functionality planned, and we actually had one of the advisory group members, John Levine, test the system, and he said the same thing about having it be automated, and I know that that was something that I think that they were also going to put in advanced functionality, but I don't believe we have it at this time.
The current registries do it that way for the most part, and that's why they use FTP. It would be great if they used a RESTful web interface, which kind of I think you've got here. So, but we'll see about encouraging them to do that in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Alexander Meyer from .at, registry backend operator for a couple of TLDs. Thanks for that. It really looks great. It looks pretty straightforward and does what it is supposed to do. My maybe very simple question, Francisco knows what's coming. How do registries get their zone data into that system? Is that an SFTP upload or?
So there, as Wendy mentioned, there are two options. Either the registry can take care of that, and the system will only take care of the credential and the terms and conditions. Or you can have your zone in the system for users to download from there. The idea is to have a simple zone transfer, and that will be configured. So the registry will allow us to download the zone file. And
okay, so it's a zone transfer.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Hi, Stephanie Perrin. I'm on the EWG. This is a very naive question because I don't understand what you mean by zone files. But let's put it this way. What data elements are you providing? And then I have two other questions. How do you apply relevant data protection law? And how do you attest to the veracity of the researcher's claims and that they've indeed done some kind of research protocol and some kind of ethics validation?
So I can address the question about the contents of the SOM file. The SOM files in the TLD SOM files contains the list of domain names that are registered and active for a given registry. It will also contain other DNS records that the registry is using depending on the registry services that they offer. The information there is available publicly, you could say, because in DNS you can query and get the information. That's the whole point of DNS. I hope that... Does that help on the question on the contents?
A wee bit. Whose IP addresses are you accessing, and you getting them normally through the DNS system?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble understanding...
Well, there was a mention of IP addresses. How does that show up, and how do you do it, and how does it map? This is a, maybe I should take this offline and quiz Rod on it.
Sure. So the IP address that is requested from the user is the IP address that the user will use to download the SOM file from the registry systems.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. Thanks.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. We have actually a lot of questions in the queue. Go ahead and ask yours, and then we'll take a couple from the queue.
My name is Roy Adams. I work for Nominet. Just a very small question, a technical one. What does the initial key do? You downloaded the key. Remember that the first time you logged in? What does that key do? What is it for?
I was going to say we have one of our security leaders here in the room. He may be able to explain it better than I. Jeff Moss, are you able to answer that? When we did the PGP download for the security key, that was one of your recommendations
right,
that we implemented?
If using PGP is an encrypted means of communicating to authenticate. Yeah.
Thanks. To repeat the question, Wendy downloaded a key at the start of the demo, and what I understand the response is eventually that key can be used to decrypt an encrypted zone file or decrypt use it in communication with the system. Thanks, Jeff. Cheers.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a lot of questions on the chat room. The first one, Francisco, you already answered in the chat room, but I'm just going to share it with everyone. Is it okay? So the first question, will the data in centralized zone data access program consolidated by centralized zone data access program, or will user be able to choose which zone to download?
Yes, as shown in the demo, the users can select the zone files that they like to have access to.
Thank you. The second question, do we get to create our own TNCs as registries? And if so, do we get to create one for each of our TLDs or registries?
Currently, that's not the case. Like I said, there's the ability in the system to create different versions, but I know that it was the intention of the designers of the program that those terms and conditions would be standardized across the TLDs. The ability to change versions was something that was considered, and that there may be a country that has a law that's specific that they needed to add something in there, but the idea is that the terms and conditions would be standardized across all TLDs.
Next question. If we request from an IP that will not be accessing the data, will we be able to amend the IP? Thank you.
So I don't think there is that functionality. I think that's a very good suggestion, and we should take it into account for the next release.
Yes. Hello. My name is Marianne Georgelin. I'm from .fr. Will the terms and condition replace the zone file access agreement?
Yes, in fact, we took the terms and conditions from an amalgamation of all the current registry zone file agreements, and so it just turned them into the vernacular of terms and conditions. That was how it started. I know that the legal team still has some work to do to finalize the terms, and I don't want to say too much about them because I may say something that's not right. But it was as basic as could be, which is basically asking for all of that information and then agreeing for the end user not to sell, distribute, and whatnot. That's the meat of what the terms and conditions are.
Thank you.
Okay, let's return to the chat room again. Just one moment. Okay, the next question is, does the end user have to click through each one if they select more than one?
And I'll show this on the screen. The answer is no. Actually, if you requested all of the TLDs, and let's see. That's not really a good reason, but I'm just for the sake of moving forward. You get a list at the top. You're requesting access to zone files for the following TLDs. So if there are 1,400 in there, you're actually going to get a list of 1,400, and then the system will log that you're this version for all of these TLDs. So that if a new version comes out, let's say, and a new TLD gets entered, then you'll have a new terms and conditions for that new TLD, and the system will be able to track which version for which TLDs you're obligated or agreed to.
Thank you. Roy Adams from NomiNet. A new registry is required to provide this data, I understand, to this system. Is that correct?
A new registry is not obligated to provide the system with their information. Like Francisco is saying, the other option is to provide credentials, and I don't have an example of that, unfortunately, but the other option is the registry would provide an FTP URL and a login and a password that the end user would then retrieve inside the system and then have to go outside the system to fetch the data.
I understand, but still, for every request, a registry operator, as I understand, has to approve it. So I can imagine, for instance, Dot Very Private, right, who does not actually agree with the concept of sharing this data, can by default deny every possible request, which makes the system a little bit less transparent as it should be, let's just say that. Is that correct?
This is Francisco. Well, the base new utility register agreement requires registers to offer access to their zone files. There are certain conditions under which they can deny the requests. I would say in general they have to offer it. There would have to be a very good reason, I guess, to say no.
And I'd like to add to that, the registry agreement does say that the registries are obligated to provide their zone data, and that's in the base registry agreement.
Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you.
Elmar Knipp from Tango Registry Services. I have a follow-up question to Roy's first question regarding the encryption. Why should this data be decrypted? In what cases? The data is ASCII and readable, and why should it be decrypted? Regarding the key which was created for the first time when you create a user.
It's Jeff Moss. So the communication between the repository and the end user can have some level of encrypted, even if some of the holders don't want their data flowing around the internet unencrypted.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why not do using HTTPS, for example?
Yeah, that's an option, but let's say you want to download the whole 500 megabyte file.
Okay. Okay, second question. You just downloaded the last version from .museum. Is there a possibility to have historical data too, for example, last week, last 4 weeks or something?
That's currently not a feature of the system. And if you'd like to send something like a request out in writing, we can pose it to the team. I'm not sure if that's something that we would be able to provide or not.
Okay. And third and my last question is, if a user downloads the data for a registry, like, for example, .museum, is .museum getting history of people who are using it or a report or something else?
Yes, and in the registry operator dashboard, I'll try to log in and talk at the same time, there is a history of the user. I don't have enough data in the system right now to show you, but when you see any user, you have a list of all of the approved requests, And for each individual user, there's a history as well. So this was some of our other testing that we did, and so you get the whole history here. And then if I don't know if I can click on the user here. This might be something that we add later, but I know that when the user is requesting the data, the registry operator is able to click on their username and see a whole history of everything that they've requested for their TLD.
Okay, then a false question. The approval is per request, not per TLD.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The approval you just showed is per request to download the file, or is it approval for getting access to the TLD at all?
Yeah, it's for having access to the TLD SOM file in an ongoing basis for the term of the... The terms of conditions.
Okay, then I have to rephrase my third question. If someone has get access to the system at all, for example, for .museum, my third question was, is it possible that the registry operator sees a report when this user has really downloaded the data?
I don't think we have that.
For example, I have a request to .com right now,
yeah.
But I haven't used it for some time, so VeriSign sent me a reminder, hello, you haven't used it, you will be cut off for the next 14 days if you don't reuse this, and that would be helpful here too.
Okay.
Thank you for that comment.
Thanks.
Wendy, or you got...
Let's take a couple more from the queue, and then we'll come back to you, Michael.
All right, this is the next question from the chat room. How does the registry operator know there is a request pending from them to approve or deny?
So when a request is placed in the system, there's the registry operator has the ability to turn this feature on or off depending on the volume, but you can choose to get an email every time you get a request if your requests are, you know, few and far between or just not high volume. But if you have a high volume of requests, you can turn that feature off, but the registry is obligated to log into the system. I think we're going to put in a feature that says you have pending requests and have a notification sent out that you have pending requests if you turn off the feature to be notified for each individual request.
Next question. Is there a way to challenge a registry denial?
Yes, that would be through our compliance department. Like I said, the registry agreement obligates the registries to provide zone data and at no cost to the end user. So if an end user goes into the system and makes a request and gets denied or gets no response, they can then file a compliance ticket, and the compliance department will then reach out to the registry and then go through that process. Okay, Michael.
Thank you, Wendy. This is kind of just an education point. Most of the people in this room know what's in the zone files and how it can be used. I think from an education standpoint, that would be helpful, particularly to the brand registries, some of which have been touted of, it's yours, it's your own domain name. They may be putting stuff in the zone file and may not start resolving it or may do some things for sort of test launches for different products. So it would be really helpful to these brand registries to explain what happens and that third people are accessing and using this data for research purposes, because I think it would really be awkward for some new brand registries to find out that perhaps some different products that they were getting to launch somehow were leaked because somebody was doing research. So from an education standpoint, I think this would be really, really important.
Thank you.
This is Elisa Cooper. So is there any expectation about how quickly the registries should be responding to the requests?
I believe it's 24 hours. I think it may say that in the registry agreement, but I'd have to go back and check on that to be sure. I think that there's a 24-hour requirement to respond.
And is ICANN compliance going to be checking this? No. Okay.
I mean, if someone complains, I think if they're making requests and no one's responding, then I think, you know, they would respond to a complaint, but they're not going to be in there policing the system.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Jay Westerdahl. I'm assuming there's a corresponding FTP site for me to log into at CZDAP, right?
For the ICANN repository? No.
Yeah.
No, so far it's only HTTP.
It's only HTTP. So for an automated company that's trying to get these things, that, and they're all being stored on this HTTP website, can you go to the screen where it shows these files that are available for download?
Hold on, let me log out and log back in as an end user. One sec.
While she does that, Elisa, 24 hours, it's in 2.1.4 of the registry agreement.
Thank you, Krista. So now, as you can see, it's actually color-coded that I've got three requests. One's been approved and two...
Can you go to the download page?
Oh, sure. Hold on a second.
Okay, so it might be useful to have a download page that shows all the files that I have access to, not each individual page for a download, right?
Say that again, that shows all.
So this, because you're only testing right now with Museum and Test 2 or whatever, so I have to access each individual page to get that download. There should be one central page with a list of all the zones I have access to, and then there should be some metadata attached to each of those. Like, for example, when was it last updated by the registry? And other stuff that you would see on, you know, FTP and stuff like that. But there should also, like, very seriously be a FTP account where I can just log in and see all those files that I have access to.
Thank you. We'll take that feedback. Another question from the queue?
Hey, Jay, I would just echo what Wendy said earlier as well. She knows the email address better than I do, but we have an email address where we're looking for feedback, so that would be a great place for you to make suggestions like that.
I assume at the microphone, face-to-face, is good enough?
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's being recorded as well, so we'll come back and listen to all of this again, I'm sure. But if you do want to send in your request, your feedback in writing, it's czdap@icann.org.
Yeah, as I use it more in the future. I assume by the time I use this, that will be in the system and that will have FTP access and all that good stuff.
You probably aren't going to get FTP access since it's an insecure plain text protocol. Oh, so it would be something like SFTP or SCP or something like that.
Rod Rasmussen again. So I know you had John Levine has looked at it, and I got my invitation like a few days ago to take a look at it. I think some of the points that Jay are bringing up is, and I have the same concerns here that we've got. We need to get some subject matter experts that have done full automation and pulling these things down at scale, because we need, you know, and there's also the question, you know, that we didn't come up yet of gaming. Right, how often do I get to pull the zone file? Because I'd love to pull it every 10 minutes if it was changing every 10 minutes. I think VeriSign offers that as a paid-for service, if I remember correctly. So, you know, what are the rules on how often I can download it? There's a whole bunch of questions there. But that's the people who are going to be stressing and using the system the most are going to be doing it in an automated fashion, and we're going to want... I love a RESTful web interface, and we can go, boom, hit all those zones we have access to and automate the whole thing rather than SFTP, which really sucks. But, you know, some people, you know, if that's the way we want to get it, we want to get it that way. But definitely get more people in the community involved at this point in fleshing this out. So, thanks.
Yes, thank you, Rod. And like I said, the public we're not doing this as a public comment period. There's no end date. That we're going to take every bit of feedback that we get and start working on advanced features. And then as we go along and as it gets more populated and things come up, we'll continue to take feedback and improve the system as needed.
There's a couple more questions in chat room. Is there a facility for bug management of request approval?
Yes, there is. For the registry operator user, just like as in the end user, when you're making requests, the registry operator does have the ability to approve them all at once. And in a click, checking in a box, you can approve all requests at once. We don't necessarily recommend that. You should definitely be looking at all the requests, but that is a feature.
As a future registry, can I just hit approve everything that comes in so I don't have to look at this thing?
Yes.
Okay, so there'd be like an automated box, just approve all.
Yep.
Okay.
The next question is, can there be more than one registry operator contact?
Yes, and thanks for asking that. I didn't show this in the demo, but the advisory group came up with this. There's a feature called Super Manager. So when the registry appoints someone to be their CZDAP contact, that person would be the Super Manager, and then that person is then able to add other registry operator users to their TLD, so that if it's a large company and you want to have five people doing it, you can.
Okay, quick question. As a portfolio of registries, that one user will be able to log in and see everything that's attached, or is there going to be multiple logins?
That's correct. Once the end user is associated with a registry or registries, then they can assign. Let's say one registry or one company owns many TLDs. You can associate all the TLDs with the one company, and then all of the users that are so you can associate users with TLDs or with the whole portfolio.
So in your example where registry operator was the administrator of .museum's access, if they also were the test administrator, those were all shown in the same panel?
Yes. I'll see if I can log in here real quick. There's a function in the ICANN admin to manage the users, and you can promote a user from registry operator to super manager, and then you can also associate users with TLDs. And you can associate TLDs with the registries. I'm calling it as a distinction, so that you have the string and the registry, and so you could say that all of these strings are associated with this registry. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If you want to demo it, that'd be great.
We don't have that many in here now, but so I've got these are super managers. I don't think we haven't even assigned any yet, but these are the operators, and then these are the users. And by editing role, you can make them assign them to registries, demote to operator, demote to regular user.
So if I promote someone to super user and they've done stuff, how do I audit that?
I'm sorry, say that again?
If I promoted someone to a super user or whatever, is there a way to...
Only the ICANN administrator can make someone a super manager, and then the super manager can manage their own users by... I think the ICANN administrator has to make someone a registry operator, but then the super manager can... I'm not sure, actually. I'm trying to think how we worked it out now, and I remember that we had different options and different features, and I'm not sure how it ended up.
So if I log in and I have five registries, and I appoint my admin to go become this role with five registries, and then they go in there and they hit the checkbox, approve all, and then they leave the company a year later, and then I demote them to a regular user, does that request to keep approving... go away, or is it, what's it attached
to? If they're demoted to a regular user, they won't have the ability to approve anymore, but all of the requests that they previously approved would be good as long as the terms and conditions, and then the terms and conditions expire, and then those end users wouldn't have access to the data anymore, but the registry operator user would lose functionality, but that is up to the registries to manage their users.
Okay, so it's the view you see inside is what the registry sees. So if I said auto-approve all requests, any user in the registry would log in and see that that box has been enabled and that all requests are coming in being auto-approved?
It's on a case-by-case basis. So when you have pending requests, you'll see a list of all of the pending requests, and you could approve all of the pending requests that are pending at once. But maybe I answered your question incorrectly.
You don't understand the question. I'm just looking for auto-approval, like...
I think what you're saying is you want for every request that comes to your registries be automatically approved without your intervention.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. We take a note. Thanks.
I answered your question incorrectly before. You can't have it like preemptively say whatever request comes in, automatically approve it. You can just approve all the pending requests at once.
Well, I don't want to have to hire an intern that logs in once a day, and nor do the 1,400 other registries. So it would be nice if you're a registry that didn't care who got access because you were mandated anyway to just pre-approve.
We'll take that feedback. Thank you. Okay, well, we're at the end of the hour here. If there's any more questions in the queue, I'll take one more, and I think we need to wrap it up.
Okay, this is the last question from the chat room. We have a lot, but I'm going to give to you.
Right. And anything that didn't get answered, we'll compile an FAQ and put it up.
Okay, so this is the one. How does a process work if the RO is providing zone access through their own system rather than through the CZ DAP system? What do the approval and downroll steps look like in this context?
Because I haven't actually been able to load a registry that uses the FTP method, I can't answer that, but as soon as we have one that wants to do it that way, then we'll set it up, and that's the best I can answer at this point because we're still, we're just rolling this out right now. Okay, last question, please. And then before you ask it, I just want to thank everybody for coming and for your great feedback, and please keep it coming.
Roy Dykes back in, Newstar back in Registry Operator for hundreds of TLDs. There's been a lot of questions, a lot of feedback in this session. Is there plans to be a sandbox both for the SFTP version as well as the HTTP version? Maybe I missed that. And if the answer is no right now, I strongly suggest the answer be turned to yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thanks, everybody. That was a lot of really good questions, and I appreciate your time, and I hope that you have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you in the public forum.